Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Independent Author Podcast. I'm Tom Kranz, and I appreciate you tuning in and downloading my podcast episodes. Today, I have the absolute pleasure of having as my guest a gentleman who has had me as a guest on his show and who is a celebrity in and around this part of New Jersey, Union County, New Jersey. He is he's an MC, he's a host, he is a comedian, and he does several, which we're going to get into, podcasts and also Facebook programs. He's kind of is not afraid to say what's on his mind about anything and everything. And consequently, that in a way that you're going to find out in a minute makes him pretty approachable. His name is Mark Lynn Johnson. His stage name is Mr. Direct, because that pretty much sums it up. And he just wrote a new book that's called Lessons from a Shit Talker. And when you go on Amazon, you'll see that the word S-H-I-T is actually S-H-asterisk-T. And that's, I guess, how we get past, we can put it up on Amazon and whatnot. How you doing, Marklin?
I'm good, man. Thank you so much for having me on your show. I really appreciate it.
Oh, hey, you had me on when I had my first novel, Budland, back when I was on the Fanwood Council, and that was hugely helpful, and it was great fun. Marklin has in his basement a complete television studio. There's multiple cameras. He's got a green screen. He was not only the host, he was the technical director, and the lighting guy was pretty awesome. You're still doing that?
I still do it time to time. It's less people involved than it was before. It's work. It's, you know, no matter what, it's work. And, you know, I enjoy doing it, you know, and I'm always looking for ways to stretch my imagination and improve it. You know, this is what I was born to do.
Gotcha. So when I saw the title of your book, Lessons from a Shit Talker, two questions immediately came to mind. Question number one is, what could these lessons be? Because, you know, I've met you a few times and I was on your show, but I don't know you all that well. And then the second question I had was, what does this have to do with me as a reader of the book? And I do have lessons. I do have questions to both of those questions. So let's start with why you wrote this book. Is this something that you thought about doing for a long time? Was there something that kind of pushed you over the edge and just said, I got to write this? How'd that happen?
Well, as you said to your audience, I do stand-up. And as a stand-up, you have to write a lot. And I'm a lazy writer. I'll admit that right off the bat. I'm a lazy writer, but I write. And I was reading a book, about if you want to get your name out there, like little things you can do. And this one article came out. I was like, anyone can write a book if they put their mind to it. It's about you just dedicating the time. I had 5 hours on a plane. I was literally flying from here to California for a project I was working on. And I just sat down and I just fired off the book. Literally, okay. That's how it happened.
So you wrote this in one sitting?
I literally, everything you saw was done in one sitting.
Wow. Awesome.
And it was, I just literally said, you know, like when I thought about writing the book, I said, there's things that I'm doing that a lot of people don't. And a friend of mine, there's part, I think I might've mentioned it in a book, I forget, where one of my friends said, like, I don't understand how you keep going. Like, you just keep going, like you don't stop. And he admired that about me. And I'm like, wow, well, maybe there's other things I can show people that they can get out of it. Because every book is Tony Robbins and all these other guys who have been out of the world successful, but it's like they're making $8 million a year successful. What about the everyday guy who's literally still busting his behind to make a name for himself, to follow his dreams? Why hasn't anyone written a book from that perspective? Because, you know, winning is not always the $8 million. Sometimes winning is finding happiness in the things that you're doing because that's what you want to do.
Wow. Great words. So, and then that leads me to the second question that I asked myself, which is, what does this have to do with me as a reader? And as I'm reading the book and you're holding up, essentially holding a mirror up to yourself, I saw that you ask a lot of the same questions that all of us either are asking ourselves or should be, you know, one of the most important of which is, and you come back to this a lot, don't let other people define you, you know, and that's something that so many of us fall into. You have stories about when you were in your favorite state, Minnesota, yeah, there's a lot about that. And I was actually really amused by your very brief stay at the Culinary Institute of America, because I consider myself kind of a closet chef, I guess. And I said, wow, that incident with the chef making you cut that potato in a certain way, that was like, you know, that's one of those little Zen lessons. You know, if you can do that, then you can do all this other stuff.
Yes.
But the lessons, yeah. The lessons that I took were, you know, a lot of them aren't new, but they're lessons that many of us don't live by, which is, you know, not only letting other people define you, but going after your dream, not being afraid to ask for what you want. And then when you do ask for it, you better be ready to work for it. And that seems like that's been kind of a mantra for you going along. Yes,
it is. It's 100%. And I want to go backwards. What's funny about when you say the thing about Minnesota, when I first put that book out, I had worked at a few companies when I was out there. And one of the girls that I had an incident with, she was like, are you talking about me? And her and I had hashed it out. We apologized to each other and everything was cool. And you notice in the book, I didn't mention any names.
Right.
I just mentioned the situation. Yeah. And I said to her, I said, no. But I'm always reflective of when you describe situations, how people kind of see themselves, you know what I mean?
Sure, yeah.
And they recognize it. And I told her, I said, you know, it wasn't you. You don't have to think it was you, because it wasn't. And then she goes, because I know what a bitch I was at the time. Yeah. You know what I mean? And it was like, one, great that you were reflective and you saw it from my perspective, finally, because we apologized and everything, but she finally saw it from my perspective. And I thought, too, the fact that she read it enough that it touched her to even make that comment. I think when I wrote it, I said, I'm going to touch people, even those that think I can't touch them. I'm going to touch a part of them. You know what I mean?
Yeah, good for you. That's cool. So you devoted the first couple pages. I guess you pretty much devoted the whole book to your late parents.
Yes.
You know, I don't go around quoting Dr. Phil, I swear to God, but he has said on more than one occasion that our parents are our single most important influences, pretty much 90% across the board for most people. It seems to me like your parents not only influenced you when you were young, but especially your dad influences you even today. Do you think that's fair?
As an African-American, nothing is more important than having a father in your life. And a lot of things in our community is based off of us not having fathers in our lives. I had a very strong, intelligent, you know, him and I battled, butted heads like you wouldn't believe. But I realize everything that I've accomplished in this life is because of what he put into me. And, you know, even when I get down on myself, I say to myself, Willie Johnson wouldn't want me to give up on myself. You know what I mean? Which is, it's weird to say it that way, but it makes sense when I say it that way, because that's what it was. And most of the people that knew my dad, they're like, wow, you know, I didn't even realize what a big influence he was on your life. And it was, you know, like even the video stuff that I do, like the things I do with the video, I recall when I was younger going to the video store and buying a camera with him. You know, like I tell a funny story, you know, before people knew what to do on cameras and we just had the big, you know, the big old VHS recorders.
Sure.
So my dad's just sitting there shaking my uncle's hands and not saying anything. Just standing there shaking his hand, recording. I'm like, Dad, you're supposed to do something. He's like, no, we're just going to shake hands, because that's what we do. We shake hands. I'm like, all right.
That's funny. Well, you touch on a number of times the fact that being Black has led people to either marginalize you or basically essentially prejudge what you're able to do and what you're able to comprehend. And I'm not a Black man, but I've heard it many times in my life, and I'm sure it's true. You say in your book, and I'm just reading a little bit here, My parents always had this thing. Don't you embarrass me in front of these white folks. Today, most people would say that my mother and father were racist, yet that notion comes from not understanding segregation and the effects mentally it had on the victims of it. I hate to use the word victim. People always accuse blacks of claiming to be victims when they talk about not being treated fairly. It always is the default line. Stop playing the victim. And, you know, as again, not being a black person, just reading it in those simple words, that helps bring that a little bit into focus for me too. It must be incredibly frustrating to live your entire life that way.
It is. And you try not to think about it. And that's why you, if you see the way I react to some people, sometimes you that line that you read, that explains why I react to them. Sure. There's a lack of, you know, there's a lack of understanding where it comes from. And as an African-American growing up in the 80s, you know, 70s, 80s, that's really when I was in high school. I graduated in 91. You know, if you had parents that were from the segregated South, and the average black person will tell you, it's one thing to embarrass your parents. It's another thing to embarrass your parents in front of black, in front of the white people, because white people already, for the most part, from their reckoning, had such a negative stereotype or thought of black people.
Yeah.
So you're just playing into what they perceive us to be.
Sure.
So you always had to live that mentality of, really, don't embarrass me in front of these white people. What's wrong with you?
Well, that's a lesson that I think is really valuable. I mean, it really helped me get that, you know, and I think that that's one of the reasons we ought to be giving some free copies of this book out to about, I don't know, a couple million white people, maybe. because that, you know, something that clear, you know, can really help somebody, you know, understand that. So today, where can we find your whatever program and performing you're doing? And I know it's COVID, so you're probably not as active as you were a year ago, but what are you doing right now that we can hear or see you do?
Well, I'm still doing the podcast. Every other Wednesday, I do Wacky Wednesdays. That's on Facebook Live underneath Mr. Direct Just Real. Okay. MisterDirectJustReal. I do one, and I do one on Sunday called Sunday Coffee, which is, you know, Sunday Coffee. It's a takeoff of a show I used to do called The Black Experience, but we talk about all different types of subjects, but we really try to highlight sometimes what we see going on in a black community, the different articles and the different things that we're finding in the world.
Now, when you say we, do you have guests? Do you take
yes, I have. I have co-hosts on Wacky Wednesdays. I have Lainey Ventura. I call her the diva. On Sunday, I have Detron Edwards. He's a comedian. And I have Melinda Gallagher. She's another comedian. And we really, what we try to do is we try to give a perspective of, because all of our voices are different, but our voices are still the frustration, the anger, and the craziness of what we deal with and how we really just, you know, people just need to understand what we're saying and how we try to present it in an intelligent way, not in an ignorant F everyone, people are idiots. We try to present it in an intelligent way as much as possible.
Well, and on that note, I want to encourage people to go to Amazon.com and purchase Lessons from a Shit Talker. And the word shit is spelled SH*T. It's right there. I think that there are actually things in here that we can all learn, or that we should all learn. It's a quick read, and it's a fun read. Marklin Johnson, I really appreciate you being with us. I wish you great success with the book, and I'll see you on Facebook.
Hey, thank you so much for this interview. I really appreciate it.
Are you an independent author looking for a venue to publicize your work? The Independent Author Podcast is considering authors for future guest segments. Contact the Independent Author Podcast by emailing podcast@theindependentauthor.com. That's podcast@theindependentauthor.com. We'll talk.